TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness.
Tribes from California to Australia are fighting wildfire with fire. For over 100 years, it has been illegal for tribes in California to practice traditional burning to prevent catastrophic wildfires. Now, the Karuk tribe in Humboldt and Siskiyou counties is bringing fire back. Here's Julia Moldavin introducing her 11-minute film entitled This California Tribe is Fighting Wildfires with Fire.
California is the epicenter of the wildfire epidemic. Over the past few years, wildfires have gotten more destructive, more deadly, and more expensive to put out. Many link this to climate change, but that's not the whole story.
Fire doesn't have to be scary.
Fire on our term is good. Fire not on our term could be bad and devastating.
Some believe that fighting fires has made things worse.
Europeans are gonna fight fire. It's like, why don't you fight rain or fight earthquakes? You know, it's just kind of this ridiculous idea.
The Karuk tribe in Northern California thinks the only solution is to embrace fire. Before European colonization, indigenous tribes practiced traditional burning for generations as a way to actually protect their forests from catastrophic wildfires.
Humans have been using fire as a management tool for millennia.
Prescribed fire is the most effective tool we have to prevent wildfires.
For over 100 years, federal and state policy has pushed to put out every fire at all costs. Now, the Karuk tribe is leading the movement to change that. They believe that both their land and their culture depend on it.
Our birthright was taken from us as fire people and fix the world people, and we're trying to restore that for the kids. We're playing catch up. We need to renew our relationship with fire. The clock is ticking.
So this is home. This is where my family's been since the beginning. And over the years, I just kind of watched it get thicker and thicker because of the laws there were. We weren't allowed to treat it traditionally like our ancestors used to do. By prescribed fire, we were able to keep the invasive species out and keep the heavy fuel loading down to a minimum. So that way our resources like the elk, the bears, and the deer, they can still pass through the brush and the woods. We got away from some of that traditional knowledge. Now we're bringing it back.
Herman Albers is the Wildland Fire Operations Specialist for the Karuk Fire and Fuels Program.
Stivery, Albers, ordinance repeat.
We are at the Soames workstation, getting things together. We'll see the crew when they get here.
His crew helps thin the forest by clearing the buildup of highly flammable brush and dead vegetation. They strategically gather it into piles away from larger trees, then they burn them. But these prescribed burns are an act of resistance. A 1911 federal policy made it illegal for people to start fires on public land. Another law said that all fires must be put out by 10 a.m. the following day. Fires temporarily decreased, but in turn, the forest thickened.
The reality is things right now are so out of balance simply because we've taken fire out of the landscape.
These forests are just tinderbox waiting to go. And we have to have fire on the landscape to keep catastrophic fire from destroying the landscape. We don't get our forest to accept fire, and we'll just keep losing these huge swaths of forest.
The tribe's ancestral territory spans over 1 million acres along the Klamath River in Humboldt and Siskiyou counties. But just like all other indigenous tribes in California, the Karuk don't have full jurisdiction over their land. So in order to legally implement prescribed burns, they must work in collaboration with the U.S. Forest Service.
We have 1.2 million acres that we want to treat and restore, and we can't do it alone. If we're trying to do it ourselves, it's going to take way too much time. We're never going to get ahead of the curve. We're way behind right now.
Last year, the Forest Service signed a new implementation plan to support traditional Karuk burning practices. The plan was born out of the Western Klamath Restoration Partnership, a historic collaboration between the Karuk tribe, the Forest Service, and other community stakeholders. They all agree on one thing. Wildfires have gotten out of hand.
Wildfires have heavily impacted this landscape in ways that make me want to vomit and cry. Incredible sacred landscapes that have been gutted by high severity wildfire.
We're sort of the doctors treating the landscape, giving it their prescription to where they can be healthy again and grow and thrive. It scares me that it might not happen fast enough that I won't be able to witness it.
The government now admits that a century of misinformed fire suppression policy contributed to the wildfire epidemic in the state. And today, anti-fire policies and general public sentiment linger nationwide.
You know, with the passage of the Weeks Act in 1911, there was a zero tolerance policy for any kind of prescribed fire. And the reality is that everybody who lived here at that time used fire in one way or another. You know, the cattlemen, the ranchers, the gold miners, the tribal communities, all used fire as a tool.
But here's the thing. Forest fires were a financial threat to the timber industry. The U.S. Forest Service was created in large part to secure a continuous timber supply for the American people. But for more than half a century, they implemented an aggressive fire suppression agenda.
Fire! Fire that roars up the valleys to the peaks with burning, exploding, sweeping everything in its path, leaving nothing but gray ashes and charred stumps and dead animals, destroying millions of board feet of timber that we need to win the war. Another American tragedy, another careless, happy-go-lucky, patriotic American like you has made Hitler happy.
The Forest Service's advertising icon, Smokey Bear, became a household name, one with lasting effect on the American psyche.
Thanks to those who helped make America great.
The next time you come to the forest, do me a favor.
Please.
Only you.
You.
Only you can prevent forest fires.
Only you can prevent forest fires was a constant reminder to Americans that all forest fires were bad, the enemy.
Just to be a Kudzu'k, you're already illegal. If we just be ourselves, we're breaking all types of laws. Our hunting practices, our fishing practices, our burning practices. Maybe they could have continued with ceremonial fire, but maybe I wouldn't be here today because they would have been rubbed out, or they'd be doing 40 years in prison for arson.
It's the right of people to use fire as a tool, and people have resisted fire suppression at the risk of being thrown in prison. You know, this place in California is the hotbed of resistance against fire suppression policy.
As the Kudzu'k try to push for more prescribed burns, California wildfires continue to get worse. In 2018, over 1.6 million acres burned across the state. That includes Camp Fire, the deadliest and most destructive fire in California history that killed 86 people and destroyed over 18,000 structures. While there is progress being made to implement prescribed burns, some say it's just not happening fast enough.
I'm not gonna see the results of my work, and that's okay, because we don't do it for ourselves, you know, we do it out of this responsibility. I'm doing it because that's my job as a Kudzu'k person. The thing I'm most afraid of is coming up short, not actually able to do the amount of work that needs to be done.
In 2018, the Western Klamath Restoration Partnership began a project to implement a 5,570-acre prescribed burn in Kudzu'k territory. Across the entire United States, 11.3 million acres were treated with prescribed fire in 2017. But prescribed fires are still difficult to implement, especially in the West. This is due to weather limitations, air quality and smoke regulations, and the fear of liability lawsuits. California has the strictest air quality regulations in the country, and private properties are speckled throughout the state's mountains. Those homes are often protected at all costs. But at the same time, the Kudzu'k are worried about protecting their way of life.
For me, I came to it through, you know, how do we protect a community from wildfires? Well, we use fire to fight fire. But for the tribal community, it's, you know, how do we get the cultural materials to keep the culture alive, whether that's regalia or food or medicine, you know, that all depend on fire.
My fear is, how do I continue being myself if I don't have these things? You know, whether it's salmon or a forest, how do I live? Maybe I'm still alive, but would you want to be if your landscape is completely gone? with regular burn intervals, it'll burn up into here. Eventually, you know, another 50 years, this will be a huge tree and this will be a huge hole, and you could have a, you know, quite a bit larger animal living in there. A little bit of fire isn't gonna affect this nice hard part, but it'll make a nice home inside. You know, fire can create all this wonderful habitat that we've been sorely lacking, where this tree's begging for it.
Prescribed fires are already proving beneficial to traditional plants.
This is a wonderful little basket material. And you see, you got your shade, all your trees didn't get totally nuked.
It'll just be wonderful. Like, you see the pliability there, and it hasn't even cut me or anything.
Some of the needles still here. It's not all ash and dust. So what that does is allow for the nutrients that are within these to go back into the soil and help promote this good growth of these shoots. Whereas if it was high intensity, all you would see is just pits of white ash everywhere. And it's just decimated. It can't come back to its natural state without a lot of love and care and help from the people.
For the Karuk, fire is a matter of survival. They worry that prescribed burns aren't happening at the scale that they need to be. Nearly 50% of Karuk territory hasn't been touched by fire in the last 100 years. And because of that, it was left completely vulnerable.
We're doing good work here. Being a Karuk tribal member, it has way more meaning to me to do this, because this is what my ancestors did, and it's what was taken from them in the past. And we're gonna make a movement, and you're gonna hear about it all over the world. And it started right here.
That was Herman Albers, Wildfire Operations Specialist, Karuk Department of Natural Resources. Before him, you heard from Chuk Hillman. Julia Moldaven is the producer and camera person of the film This California Tribe is Fighting Wildfires with Fire. Her film was posted on YouTube in October 2019. Sadly, the message and cultural fire practice did not spread fast enough to lessen the catastrophic impact of the 2020 record-setting California wildfire season. It burned 4.25 million acres. In an extraordinary case of symmetry that shows that cultural intentional burning is a shared practice among all indigenous peoples. The next segment of this program takes you to Australia. For decades now, Aborigine elders and their young students have campaigned to bring back the practice of cultural burning. And they warned if nothing was done to protect the forests, bush, and grasslands, there would be devastating wildfires across Australia. The world watched in horror and grief when 46 million acres burned in the 2019-2020 fire season, and over 1.25 billion wild animals perished. ABC, the Australian Public Broadcast Service, produced a moving film entitled How Indigenous Fire Management Practices Could Protect Bushland. The guide through the film is Victor Stephenson, author of the 2020 book, Fire Country, How Indigenous Fire Management Could Help Save Australia. The film opens with Victor Stephenson setting a humble fire with one match.
Fire is beautiful. It's like water. It trickles through the landscape, and the right fire protects the trees, and it brings food and encourages new life. It takes away all the rubbish that's suppressing the landscape. It looks after our animals, and even the animals know fire. It is something that belongs in this landscape. But when people don't know the fire and they disconnect themselves from the landscape, then that's when we have trouble.
The New South Wales are in the grips of a bushfire emergency.
The house behind me is too far gone.
When I see the fire out of control and raging, it makes me frustrated and really sad for the land.
Guys, it can come up in the blink of an eye. I'm looking at that tree right now that's sparking.
It just was so intense. It was just unbelievable.
It's heartbreaking when you can actually see an alternative and you've walked with fire that is so safe. To see what our firefighters have had to deal with is just, you know, it's terrible.
This summer shows you that fire has to be addressed. The people most skilled at doing that are Aboriginal experts. They're willing to help. Surely we should ask them for that help.
The old people chose me to do this work. This is a responsibility that was thrown upon me, and I intend to finish that.
As a cultural fire practitioner, Victor travels around Australia visiting communities. The interest from communities is huge, from Indigenous communities and non-Indigenous communities.
When those catastrophic fires went off, my phone went crazy. Thousands of people that are saying, look, we need you to come down and start a program here and there. And
Aboriginal fire management is very complex, and it's a lot of layers of knowledge and information. But it's all based on the really cool burn, which is low in intensity. The hot fires that we often see in the wildfires, and even the hot fires we often see with hazard reduction burning, is not good for the country.
So there's a difference of the return for food for animals. When you burn this at the wrong time, you'll have 6 months of no food. When you burn at the right time, you get food in 6 days.
I've learnt from Victor is that we're burning to promote native grass. We're not burning to kill weeds. That's not the way you go.
Support each other. Yeah, I worry that we've been doing the wrong thing for some time. I am definitely converted to the idea of cultural burning as a key resource for us.
Victor learned from elders who learned from elders, and he's now starting to share that knowledge and tell that story. And I think that's important.
Well, the old people always talked about fire and applying fire in a way that is in sync with the seasons and in sync with the breeding times of the animals. The old men would look at indicators in the landscape. So if it was time to burn a certain ecosystem, there will be certain flowers that indicate when to burn. What they taught me was how to read the landscape. It was just really amazing how those old people could break down each different ecosystem to having a certain type of burn. And that is where it's very sophisticated knowledge.
This area we've been burning for the last 3 to 4 years, doing traditional burning. And we've shown here that the right burning has encouraged the grass species.
Hundreds of Aboriginal tribes made up the continent, all speaking different languages, but all with one thing in common, the responsibility of traditional fire laws to the country.
What the early settlers and explorers could see was that Aboriginal people were burning constantly. Cook, going along the East Coast, talks about the frequent little fires and the constant smoke. Some of the early artists also depicted smoke. Aboriginal fire had two basic objectives. One of them was to reduce fuel, and the other was to provide a habitat for every species.
When the settlers came to Australia, it changed immediately by taking fire out of the landscape completely. And so what was going on for thousands of years of people looking after the land, suddenly it just stopped.
When the old people got their land back through the native title claim, it was still classified as national park. They weren't really allowed to put fire on the land.
George and Tommy would be like, you know, we got to burn, we got to burn. You know, the land's so unbalanced and so sick. When we drove around on their country, they were heartbroken. They were seeing weeds and dead grass over the bonnet of the car, and, you know, they couldn't find places, they couldn't recognise their land. eventually one day, the same thing happened, and I said, burn it, old fellow, why don't you just burn? And then he said, all right then, let's do it. Lit the grass and ran tiptoeing back into the truck and closed the door, and we looked at the fire, it just started taking off, and our hearts were beating, and we knew we were in trouble straight away. We just knew we were in trouble for doing that.
It was the National Park Service and neighbours were concerned. But I think it was a turning point because there was a recognition more broadly from neighbours and the agencies that this was something they were going to do. So, with or without a permit.
Yeah, brilliant burn, eh? Yeah, look at that,
yeah. The old fellas got more game. They went and did it again. And they kept doing that until the parks and the well, government and the police, they all sort of said, well, these old fellas, they're doing something good here. They're not actually just lighting fires for the fun of it.
Once we started doing the burns over time, over a couple of years, we started to see weeds disappear.
It was quite amazing to watch whole landscapes be burnt and seeing how skillfully and tenderly they did that. Flowering was protected. There was a decrease in bare ground. There was an increase in diversity of the understory. There was a decrease in the scar height. There was absolutely no doubt in my mind that it was a positive thing for the environment and also a positive thing for people.
That's when I realised the power of traditional knowledge, and there was hope to set things the right way. When we got our first fire permit of national parks, we were so happy. It was like getting a letter from the Queen.
Go to place, say you burn here, right, you might go to the next place burn.
Around about then, Peter Stanley came to us, wanted to do a PhD on the firework. And I said to her that the PhD can only happen if those old fellas were properly recognised.
But without only me left.
The comprehensive knowledge that those old people held of the country and all the components of it was absolutely phenomenal.
Same time, that'd be right.
Took a year or so working with James Cook University, and in 2005 they awarded them honorary doctorate so that they could be listed as co-researchers on the PhD thesis.
So the old people became Dr. George Musgrave and Dr. Tom and George.
When they came back from the university thing with all the little blue hat, and they thought they were the king of the world. Oh, well, they were pretty over the moon about it.
Everyone's a part of.
And it was a big thing for me. They helped me so much, and they've always said to me, keep going, boy, and yeah, you keep doing what you're doing.
That formula,
and from there, I did it for them. It was just to let the world know that Aboriginal knowledge is a valuable knowledge source that we need into our future. And we're only just seeing that now people are understanding and how much we need that knowledge. When I saw the catastrophic fires happening this summer, it was no surprise to me. It was a time bomb waiting to go off. The massive amount of fuel loads and the wrong vegetation, that's lined up with drought as well. I feel sorry for the firefighters. They're just volunteers. And then they're thrown out into a war zone, into an inferno. Out of all the pain and all the loss, I just hope that something good comes from this.
First time I experienced normal reduction burns by local fire brigades, they were actually outright scary. And it went into a massive big smoke stack. And Colin and I was wondering how many animals died in this. These indigenous cultural burns, totally different feeling. It's so relaxed, it's so cool. That fire doesn't have to be threatening.
I've been in the Queensland Rural Fire Service now since 2012.
The way that Indigenous burning is conducted is totally different to what we're used to in the fire service. We've been putting in too hot of a fire, blanketing too far an area, not allowing animals to escape. Victor is a revelation. We don't need to black out the whole country and burn everything in sight. We can go out now on a reduction burn and consider the animals that are in the area. Is it the right time for that sort of vegetation to be burned? Is it the right time for the birds? Are they safe?
I've done burns all over the country and seen the improvements in landscapes. And there are even places where the last wildfire went and didn't burn our cultural burn areas. And a couple of people got their houses saved from cultural burns. The fire just went out and went around them.
I call on all members to support the declaration of a climate emergency. If we don't take immediate action, more bush will burn.
These catastrophic fires that have just happened has woken this country up. It's incredible. And I just want all the talk to stop. I have no doubt in my mind that Indigenous knowledge of fire is the key to adapting to climate change. Start looking after the land. Look after your rivers, your water. Burn your country the right way. If we see this through the Indigenous lens, then climate change is an exciting time, an opportunity.
Victor's goal now is to ensure that what he's been entrusted with by those two old people gets out and is well known sort of all around the world.
For me, it's about getting this done and achieving those dreams for them and getting the fire happening back on the landscape.
Pull all this off. Show it around.
And I just want to make sure that there's 1,000 practitioners out there once I'm done.
They listen to us now. They believe us now. They pick old people to show them how to do. Right, not to cut the trees and not to put a dozer through. They believe us now. They believe us. Aborigine.
We need change. We need to do things differently. Give Aboriginal people a go for once.
You heard excerpts from the ABC documentary, How Indigenous Fire Management Practices Could Protect Bushland, posted in April 2020, after a fire season that shocked the world. Victor Stephenson is connected to Aboriginal culture through his mother and two elders who taught him, Tommy George and George Musgrave. Victor Stephenson advocates a return to cultural burning and Indigenous-led fire and country management. He has taken part in national training workshops on burns for over a decade across a range of different ecosystems across Australia. You can hear this program again for free on TUC Radio's website, TUC Radio.org. Look at the newest programs or the podcast page. My name is Maria Glurden. Thank you for listening.